The Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman, also called H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel, also called Q.
We learned a lot about new ways to play today. We are recording the day of Google's big show at GDC, showing off the Stadia and all of the, both of the games that they have to offer through that service. It's an interesting idea. I'm kind of curious to see where this goes. It's too early to say anything definitive yet, but even if it's not immediately applicable to my life, I can definitely see a lot of these ideas carrying over into video gaming's future.
I go back and forth when it comes to Google. I don't like a lot of the things they do. I love some of the things they do. We certainly have aspects of even this podcast you're listening to powered off Google. We correspond with Gmail. We have our website that you can email us through the Gmail. So I love some of the things that Google does. This did, though, to me, H, feel kind of like it could be the future of games.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm ready to go into an all streaming future. You know, that feels like a very old man thing to say, and I'm sure that when people listen to this podcast, even probably 2 years from now, it's going to seem completely idiotic thing to say. But I do like a lot of the ideas that they introduced, this idea of state sharing, of being able to kind of like create a save state and then just share that widely across the internet for people to pick up where you left off. The idea of, you know, potentially like streaming to YouTube at the same time that you're streaming the game, and potentially kind of like encoding those streams with richer information because it is kind of interpolating the game data as it's playing. Like, there's a lot of really cool things that I'm sure are just around the corner here. I just don't know if the American internet infrastructure is up to the task.
It's true. You know, it's funny because I've heard a lot of people, a lot of gamers say that they are worried about streaming because not everywhere has good internet, but weirdly, I don't hear the same group of people talking about like, oh, Netflix doesn't stand a chance. And I know we're talking about slightly different stuff here, but like at the end of the day, Google needs to basically send you a video signal and you need to ingest it. And I think if you have confidence that you can get Netflix or any of the streaming devices, if you watch a YouTube video in your home, Google runs YouTube, so no one is better positioned, I think, to send video to a home than Google. Now it's a matter of can they execute on the games? Can they execute on the original stuff? And man, if they can bring back split screen co-op because they can just simply run two instances of a machine, that will be a real boon to some of my favorite genres of games.
I have a lot of questions right now, you know, what kind of environmental impact will running these supercomputers for potentially hundreds of millions of subscribers cost? Like, what would, what is the latency going to look like? Because, I mean, even running audio from my TV to my soundbar, which is connected by a physical cable that is only about a foot long, introduces a noticeable delay that is distracting when watching live action programming. And I just don't know. I don't know yet.
Yeah.
But we'll see. And maybe this will be another pressure on ISPs to kind of loosen their monopolies or to lessen some of the restrictions that they put on things. I'd say for the Netflix comparison, I'm willing to watch a stream of variable quality, but when it comes to actually playing games, like, I'm so used to getting the kind of crisp gameplay experience of it looking just right that, you know, even a little bit of blurriness just does make a bigger difference for me than it does when I'm just like watching stuff on YouTube or Amazon Prime.
I share those skepticisms with you. And, you know, the best version of this will be in 5 years. It doesn't matter what device you have, you can play the new games that are out, and even potentially your old Xbox, your old PlayStation can stream the latest and greatest stuff. And I think that looks more like the end of, quote, console generations than sort of iterative console hardware.
That's exciting. You know, there's a lot of people on Twitter today, especially, that's really kicking off about, like, well, they didn't show any games, you know? What are they going to start convincing me to actually buy one? It's like, mate, you already own one. That's the whole point of the presentation.
you don't
have to buy into the ecosystem. I mean, you might have to get a subscription down the line, like whatever the pricing model looks like you already own the necessary hardware. So like getting it in people's homes is not a concern. Like this is like the Wii times 1,000, because this is like for everybody, because everybody already owns the system.
Yeah. Which, the last point that I'll make on this, those rare achievements that they say only small percentages of people complete games, I bet you that percentage is going to get much smaller, so us hardcore, quote-unquote, gamers can differentiate ourselves by letting the credits roll on some of your favorite titles.
I mean, to be fair, those diamond achievements that you get on Xbox now, I feel like every achievement that I unlock is a diamond achievement now, and I don't know why that is, but...
I think it's because you and I are the only people that own Xbox at this point.
I guess so. I was going through Snake Pass, and like even completing the tutorial was a diamond achievement. I'm like,
really? So rare.
I guess, you know, people get turned off to that one really quickly, I guess. Anyways, let's get on with the show. I'm going to introduce my idea first today. And I am kind of treading familiar ground. I'm not going to lie on this one. This is there was an idea that I introduced fairly early on in the show's run of doing a kind of a wide open world racing game that is kind of modeled after the actual United States. Inspired by the crew, but instead of using kind of a fictionalized and squished down version of the US, it uses actual kind of Google Maps to procedurally generate all of the buildings and all of the roads and everything, so you can literally race down the road that you grew up on and, you know, anywhere you want to go. And so I'm taking that overall basic idea, and I want to focus a little bit more on an aspect of it that I think is cool. It doesn't necessarily have to be attached to something like that, but it would need a ridiculously large map in a way. So I'm thinking, you know, this kind of procedural idea that we've already created is a good launching point. So from there, I would like to introduce this idea of, instead of in cars, you are on foot primarily. Not necessarily primarily, but that is kind of your default state, whereas in like a Need for Speed, you are always in a car from activity to activity. You're on foot, and it is a mad world, or like an Amazing Race style race, where basically you're tasked with getting from, you know, point A to point B, but it's not like within a city, you know, five city blocks as like a normal street race. Like, this is a continent spanning journey that you have to go on. And so, you know, kind of like Grand Theft Auto, you can walk around the cities, you can maneuver around them, you can try to, I think interactions would have to be kept pretty simple, but you could either, you know, steal cars, you could hire an airplane, you can do whatever you need to do. You can raise money by doing tasks in certain locations, try to buy a ticket somewhere else, but all you need to do is to get to this other location and by, you know, whatever means necessary, planes, trains, or automobiles, whatever will get you there. So let's go ahead and start the clock. I hope it's not too similar to what I had pitched before, because honestly, I don't remember.
So in this, you're kind of imagining a Grand Theft Auto-esque set of interactions with this generated world?
I would think it would have to be a little bit simpler than that, to try to keep everything kind of procedural. You know, there would be people that you could interact with. I don't want it to be a completely bare world. I do like, you know, civilians that you can, that would get in your way potentially, or, you know, the traffic would discourage you from driving through cities, but at the same time, that's where a lot of the big opportunities are to get, you know, train stations and the nice cars and whatever it is.
That's interesting. Now, it's a matter for me of trying to find, like, how, because so much of those interactions, I think, in those type of games are an on-foot game, feel good when they're authored. So what tools could I give you in this open world to sort of make your own fun? Like, you know, is this, am I a character that's a little bit more Crackdown-esque? Is this, is some of this just seeing how much I can mess with the physics of the world, or do you see it as trying to stay as grounded kind of as it can be?
Well, it's not really an aimless world. I don't mean to disparage any of the open world games out there, but, you know, in Grand Theft Auto, you are encouraged to make your own fun, whereas in something like this, you are encouraged to race, essentially, race around the country, race around the world, whatever the scale is. And so everything that you are doing is working towards that goal of getting that much closer to your destination. Like I said, whether you are stealing cars, whether you are buying cars, you're buying plane tickets, whether you are flying the plane yourself or taking a helicopter, a submarine, a train through all these locations. And, you know, there would be interesting things like little story events that happen along the way. But for the most part, like, you are solely focused on transportation.
One of the things that could be cool here and maybe make it feel a little bit different is, what if you played with the idea of either a mode, or maybe this is the main kind of crux of the gameplay, where you allow asynchronous sort of racing.
Oh, yeah.
And I guess what I mean by, like, you know, have a group of friends, you all get like an hour a day or whatever, you can make whatever, you know, bonuses or whatever distance you can cover in that time, then it's kind of pencils down. And therefore you can have these like races that just span weeks of time and make you feel like you're actually trekking the globe.
I think that works really well. I mean, obviously the world is such a big place. Like they said about No Man's Sky, like, you can find other players, but you're just never going to, because the universe is so infinitely huge. And so, you know, having this kind of head-to-head multiplayer doesn't really serve that much of an advantage versus just saying, you know, if theoretically you set up in a giant race and it takes like 8 hours to get to the destination based on all the routes and stuff that you have to go down, then, you know, you set your time and it's up to the people that you're competing against to break your time in whatever, you know, period of time that they're working with. So you could even kind of set up a global challenge, as we saw again today during the Google Stadia presentation, like a global challenge. Say, I made it from, you know, Morocco to New Mexico in however many hours.
Right.
And just, you know, beat that. Do what you can.
What I like about this, or maybe what's a challenge for me about this, is this happens to me a lot in Forza, where there'll be a ghost or something that has clearly taken some kind of crazy path, or they have access to some car or vehicle that I don't have, so I don't really stand a chance to keeping up with it. But the idea of really flattening the plane and making everything a little bit more pedestrian, like, if you can finally get, you know, to Europe or whatever, and like suddenly the cars that you're driving are small European and you've got winding roads and all this stuff. Like, if you can almost craft a set of vehicles and geography that are more like very broadly country based, enough to be identifiable, but also just kind of, they'll have to be generic in some way, unless you, I mean, it would be interesting to kind of open up the gate and allow anybody from any of their respective countries author content only into their country.
That's interesting. I definitely like this idea of where this is going. Also, I want to introduce another wrinkle, just like the It's a Mad, 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 Mad World inspiration that I set out with. Is maybe you have to also obey the laws, or if you break the laws, then you are taking a risk. And so, you know, you can't just like in Forza Horizon, how you can just kind of like belt through a straight line through somebody's, you know, backyard and into a field and then reemerge on the road on the other side. You know, in this one, if you're driving in a way that attracts attention to yourself, then you could potentially be penalized and, you know, maybe not take you out of the race entirely, but you can incur a hefty financial fee that you'd have to pay off. And, you know, all of that takes time and it takes away some of the resources that you have to race with.
Right.
Yeah, I guess another point of interest would be the mobile game 80 Days, which is awesome. And it's all about kind of like setting your own course across the world. It's more of a text adventure-y type game, but you have these story moments you run into. You have to kind of think about how you interact in these different cultures, in these different societies. And you have to trade, you have to buy things in one city and sell it in another to try to make a profit. And all of this is all about kind of like setting up an idea of the long-term journey, which is something that you don't really get very often in video games.
Yeah, that's cool. Another like take on that too. Imagine if in this race you had to like spend time at the borders, like exchanging your currency and actually getting or else you won't have any money to spend when you get to this new place. So you're kind of rolling the dice there.
Yeah. Or if you have to submit, that's a weird term for it. If you had to deposit your money into a bank, but maybe there's only banks in cities or towns or something. So that's another reason to venture into the busy cities to try to deposit your money. Because if you're carrying all of your money and you get jumped by hooligans or you crash out on the side of the road and, you know, there are potential risks to carrying a lot of money on you.
Yeah, like you said, if there's, I don't know if it's like selling or trading, but maybe tasks you can do along a race to make money. So, you know, you're managing kind of the raw speed of making it across the country with like balancing your resources. So you actually have the funds and the ability, like somebody who saves up money can take a train at one section of the leg, you know, one leg of the journey and potentially get a benefit there.
Yeah. And like I said, I wanted to have some sort of story moments. Maybe those only kind of occupy the kind of otherwise downtime, because I don't want somebody to just, you know, lose a race because they happen to find the wrong story situation. Like, that feels like just really bad RNG in a game that is, well, I don't know, actually, you know, because this isn't going to be a photo finish split second race. Like, maybe that's part of the fun of, you know, like when you're traveling in real life, you run into all sorts of obstacles that you never would have predicted. So I don't know. I'm undecided. What is your take on that?
I think it's cool to play against a timer in general with a set start point or a general area as a start point and a general area as an end point. And then like, if you fail the race, maybe now the next race you can do, it's almost like being an Uber or a Lyft car. You can really only take the passengers that are around you immediately. So now you have a new platform. So at minimum, you're going to be dealing with a new challenge and potentially signage and resources that are in a different language. I think it could be cool. It could be that like I constantly have a second monitor with a window open where I'm just looking up stuff about a culture.
Yeah. Yeah. And kind of an educational tool in the same way that a Carmen Sandiego game is as well. So that's kind of fun. I like that. Well, let's go ahead and close that down. And we've escorted it to the finish line. Let's come up with a name. How about like Globetrotter?
That's cool.
That's that'll do then.
Yeah. Surprising. I mean, it's probably taken, but hey.
Yeah. Well, you know, we don't know. And so that plausible deniability, I think that holds up in court.
Exactly.
Copyright court. Q, what are you bringing us today?
I am bringing you something weird. So I went to Metacritic recently and discovered that they have the ability to show top games of all time. And the results there, please go check it out. They will probably surprise you. I'm sure that you'll be like, I don't know about some of these. But I decided to live in the spirit of what we always suggest with our listeners and say, what if you smash one thing up against another? And took two of the top games of all time, according to Metacritic. Grand Theft Auto 4 meets Super Mario Galaxy.
Okay.
So the best I can figure a smash up of these things looks like is maybe mini spherical like towns or cities, or you can cause chaos. You can go inside of buildings and, you know, maybe you have a wanted level that you get chased all around the sphere or whatever. Maybe the goals are you have to just wipe out all the police on one of these like mini planets and steal all the money, or I don't know, sleep with all the people. Anyway, it sounds weird, so I figured I'd bring it.
All right, let's go ahead and start the clock. This is puzzling. I'm trying to think about like where to go with this. I mean, obviously the safe answer would just be Grand Theft Auto in space, which it might be worth pursuing. Like, that's kind of a cool idea now that I say it out loud. But, you know, let's incorporate some of these gravitational elements. Grand Theft Auto was such a... The thing that makes it interesting is like the storytelling and the world that it creates and having this feeling of a real place.
This interconnected whereas
Mario
city.
Is all about these abstract, you know, unrealistic locations. So, tricky ones to blend together.
When I started thinking about it at first, I was kind of caught up in how do you not just say, you know, it's almost like the words explain itself. What if you just made Grand Theft Auto on, you know, in Mario Galaxy sized levels? Yeah. What is a way to tell those stories? Like, what would a Grand Theft Auto feel like if you set it on, say, the moon? You know, it's hard for me to not get into the territory of, say, a Saints Row when I start thinking of like suits and power ups and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's almost like, what is a Grand Theft Auto with maybe very light superpowers, or what does a very grounded thing feel like if you're actually on a kind of spherical level?
Well, the tricky thing for me is that the moon and a lot of these areas from Mario, you know, other than the sheer joy of platforming, is there's kind of boring locations.
Yeah.
Like, there's no cities, there's no people, there's nobody to talk to, there's nobody to... Rob, you know,
hey man, it sounds like it was a bad idea. No, no, yeah, yeah, like, yeah, I think you're right.
Find the interesting aspects of this and try to, you know, we get to challenge ourselves sometimes. It's good.
Yeah. So what are some of the things that kind of make Mario Galaxy Mario Galaxy outside of just like the format of the levels? Is it like, I don't think I've ever done anything resembling platforming inside of a Grand Theft Auto like setting, mostly because Rockstar controls do not lend themselves well to that type of setting. But maybe we say we've got maybe Mario-esque controls in a Grand Theft Auto like thing. Now you're getting into the kind of New Donk City territory.
All right. So let's say that we use Mario as the starting point and try to build some Grand Theft Auto on top of that. What are the kind of inalienable aspects of the Grand Theft Auto experience that we'd really want to preserve? I mean, the character interactions and the complexity of exploring a living world definitely kind of speak for themselves, but there's nothing there that feels like really unique to a Grand Theft Auto experience. I mean, if you want to even argue it, like, we've had games like this before, like wasn't one of the Jack and Daxter games kind of Grand Theft Auto-y?
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I guess that's an interesting point. So it's so funny now that you say start with Mario, because it just took me into a place of, what if you had Mario Odyssey, only all of the levels were one massive map, and you even had long like roadways and raceways to get there, and you introduced vehicles and almost like smashed Mario Odyssey into Mario Kart.
So now we have Banjo-Kazooie Nuts and Bolts.
Damn it. Everybody's done that. I mean, obviously this is a good idea if we've got that. I mean,
yeah,
you
I
just named really some great games.
Some truly successful games.
So, yeah, I like the idea of what could we do. Like, could there be a story where, you know, the whole core, like, story of Mario is Mario was, I guess, a plumber from Brooklyn who one day went to the Mushroom Kingdom. And it's unclear to me if New Donk City is, I guess, not, it's not in the Mushroom Kingdom, but it's not quite Earth. It's hard to tell. So what if we took Troll Mario, just like everybody was talking about when Odyssey was first announced, little Mario looking Mario, and put him in the Grand Theft Auto world and setting, and gave him, like, obviously he can pilot vehicles. We've seen him do that. He can eat mushrooms, like wherever he, I guess you go to a forest and pick mushrooms, and he can grow larger and that sort of thing. Like, is there fun to be had as Mario if you just like took him and put him in the GTA 4 or 5 map.
I'm thinking about it. And
because he doesn't have guns, right?
I mean, you could do anything that you want to really at this point. You can make your fire flower a very, you know, deadly variety if you wanted to. But so the thing that's entertaining about Mario games is that everything in the environment around you is a platforming puzzle that you just have to find a way to approach, you know. And so if you're walking through New Donk City and you see an alleyway, then it kind of challenges you to jump up the sides of the walls and find a secret that's hidden on the side of one of the buildings. And,
right.
You know, everything is a puzzle. And in Grand Theft Auto, the appeal is that everything is kind of ordinary. And so if you were to take an ordinary world and just build these puzzles into it, like, that's fun, but it doesn't feel markedly different than New Donk City and what they've done there.
Yeah.
Yeah, even if we were to kind of increase the size of it. But let's keep thinking, because I think we'll find it. We just need to dig deeper.
Maybe the tie into reality. Like, because I think some of what was appealing about this idea to me is, like, Mario meets the real world. And I know that we talked, you talked about a little bit, that's kind of what New Donk City is doing. But, like, what if, okay, Mario 64... and Odyssey, Mario can jump into paintings. What if we set Mario loose in the Louvre or, you know, an art museum that exists in the real world, and Mario could kind of jump into, hey, maybe even using some of this Google technology we saw shown off today, jump into these impressionistic paintings and live in those interpretations of world. And instead of getting sort of the Mario aesthetic that we always get, we're kind of jumping in between, heck, let's go for like the Museum of Modern Art or something in New York, because he's from Brooklyn after all. And Mario's kind of playing in a real art history space.
Okay.
It's a little far away from Grand Theft Auto, but it's maybe it's something.
Grand Theft Auto's famous appreciation for art history and its deep educational background.
Yeah, that's perfect.
This might be nothing, but let's, just to get it out there, what if you were kind of a formless, like a ghost of a character, taking inspiration from another open world game, Prototype, I think it was, and you are able to complete platforming challenges or social challenges or just all sorts of different types of challenges by possessing people in the real world. And basically, you know, if you, if one of your characters falls off into the pit, then, you know, you don't try again. You just have to go and possess somebody new and get them back to where they were before. You know, that person is dead for all intents and purposes. And so you'd have kind of a platformery type game that was informed by it being a living world that you could disrupt.
You know, we're talking about starting with Mario. Is there a Mario goes into a pipe, shows up in the real world, and he is a, you know, just dirty, pudgy, plumber's crack plumber who actually has to, like, he realizes that he's back in the real world. He actually has to make money and stuff, and he's got to go beyond plumbing. He's got to become a criminal Mario to get ahead and somehow, like, afford enough money to talk to someone who claims that they can buy his way back into the Mushroom Kingdom.
I know those types of people.
You do? Wait a second.
So maybe this is like a sitcom where there's like a foreign exchange student. So there's a Grand Theft Auto world and the Mushroom Kingdom, and their protagonists like swap places. And so Mario is happy-go-lucky platformery Mario in the real world.
Oh.
And this gangster character is trying to, like, run stuff in the Mushroom Kingdom all of a sudden. So, I don't know. It's a funny idea.
That would actually be... Okay, so now we've maybe got something here. A Grand Theft Auto-style game, but instead of, like, switching characters like we do in GTA 5 on this sort of grand scale, you switch worlds, and you are switching between mm-hmm. the super ultra friendly cartoony Mushroom Kingdom with a protagonist who is turned into a Mario-like figure who is maybe foul mouthed. So now you get that little, you get a little bit of Conker vibes in there. And just
to be fair, I would love a Grand Theft Auto game in a like Conker's Bad Fur Day sequel.
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, maybe we just make this a full Conker thing, and so we have somebody who's like really, you know, off put by all the weird friendliness and talks about how creepy everything is and like, why doesn't anybody here think that this is crazy and weird? And then you juxtapose it with the really gritty real world quests and like an inappropriately happy Mario plumber who maybe looks like a beautiful, smooth teenage boy or something going around and doing just or having to take part in or both teach their respective world something. Oh my God, H, we've done
there
it.
There we go. All right. Well, we are past time on that one.
Ugh.
We got somewhere anyways, so.
It didn't feel a second over 40 minutes.
Let's give a name to what we created.
Why don't we say Mario Kingdoms Collide?
Okay. Mario Kingdoms Collide. Grand Theft Mario.
Grand Theft Mario.
Wow. That will do us for today, and let's go over to our community to see what y'all have in the pot for today. So this comes from Nathan Norman, who we've heard from before, who says, "Hey guys, with the rising trend of games as a service, I realized that Nintendo have not yet tried to adapt any of their core IPs to the genre. So my idea is an RPG game in the Zelda universe with a focus on party-based dungeon crawling. You can choose for your character to be human, Korok, Goron, Zorin." It's all these things in succession that make it difficult.
Korok, Zorin.
Yeah, exactly. Gerudo, etc. You do run into Zelda, Link, and Ganon, but their story is essentially an Easter egg compared to your own. Well, that's my pitch. Looking forward to hearing what you do with it. All right, and starting the clock there.
Nathan, this is totally rad. I love this idea, and the more sort of Diablo likes, which I imagine that's what I'm imagining in my head that exists in the world, the happier I am. Yeah, especially if you started to bring in, is one of the ones that he listed the Zorin? Who is the bird people?
Those are the Rito.
Yeah, the Rito. So I feel like you could get some Rito action in here too and really have a full Marvel Ultimate Alliance worth of Zelda characters. Some of those powers are so cool, and to have them split up amongst the group to use in succession with each other, like certain character classes can protect and heal, and other, you know, obviously my Goron's going to be tanks, but they're the ones that actually have bombs. So taking that entire sort of spate of Link weaponry and powers and siphoning it off and creating a class-based dungeon crawler sounds really cool to me.
All right, so we talked about Marvel Ultimate Alliance, which kind of follows this Gauntlet Legends type of action RPG light gameplay, like, you know, popcorn gameplay, but really satisfying. It packs a punch, and it's great to collaborate with people that have different power sets to kind of complete each other's. This almost could be like a really light tabletop kind of experience. You're building your character, you're going on these adventures. It's all kind of collaborative and multiplayer in that way. There are a couple of Zelda games that already kind of like fit the mold a little bit. Triforce Heroes, Four Swords Adventures, you know, right. There are these kind of multiplayer-ish Zelda games, and they often do make you split the magic power sets between the multiple characters. And where do we go that differentiates it more from these previous titles?
One of the things that I would like to do, because we spent so much time, last year now with Breath of the Wild, and maybe it was 2 years ago. Was it 2 years ago? Oh my goodness.
Yeah, 2017.
Oh boy. Okay. With Breath of the Wild, and you know, so much of the Breath of the Wild lore suggests like, hey, things were very different a long time ago. And I would love to go to make this thing a Breath of the Wild prequel of sorts. And you're playing as the heroes, the champions, if you will, mm-hmm. having one open connected world where it is leading up to the assault on Ganon's castle or whatever. But instead of each of the sort of what are they called? The temples? Oh my goodness, I forgot. All the little challenge.
The guardian beasts, what are they?
Not only that, but I mean the little ones, just the...
Oh, I see, the shrines.
Yeah, the shrines. So having the shrines kind of scattered all about and having each shrine be a, you know, imagine the Breath of the Wild map kind of pulled out into that isometric Diablo-esque view, and then the shrines serve as like different styled dungeons and stuff that the team can go through, and maybe you're like knocking off these dungeons in order to like slowly take back the land, and you get different sections, and you're just kind of almost Ubisoft style chipping away at all these shrines and conquering these dungeons together until you have, you actually have to accumulate enough power to go fight Ganon.
Man, it's just, my head is swimming in all the potential details that we could bring to this. So let's think about moment-to-moment gameplay. If we want to keep this kind of like light RPG action type of experience.
I love the idea of tabletop. I wish I had more frame of reference to discuss the tabletop stuff.
Yeah, this could be, and we've used this point of reference before, but like a CRPG game, like a Divinity Original Sin 2, which is multiplayer, which you can play with your friends, just kind of set in a Zelda universe where there's storytelling, you all kind of walk around together, you can engage with town folk, you can have more of those kind of like normal person-to-person interactions that you don't get in a Gauntlet Legends, a game that's all entirely revolving around action. You get a little bit more of that puzzle solving, which Zelda is so known for. I just think that like walking around with a group of people, but at the same time, like there are games like that. And so I don't want to just like create another game in a well-established genre, just putting a Zelda skin on it.
You know, yeah, I agree with you, but I will also say that like, Hyrule Warriors for me was the Zelda skin on a genre that I used to love and have kind of grown colder to. And so to see the Zelda skin put on a genre that I am still currently hip to would be novel in and of itself. I know he's saying here that there's Zelda and Ganon and Link are there, but they're kind of side people. It would be very interesting to maybe see, you know, a previous Link or Link before he went to sleep, the champion Link, potentially be like the commander of the base, the person like giving you missions, right? It's him and Zelda kind of doling out these things. And we, you know, we've never really got to see the Zelda Link, you know, rule essentially over Hyrule. So I think it could be an interesting story to tell, even if it's told through the lens of like the people working for them, essentially.
Okay. I guess I never really pictured Link as being the ruler in a way.
Yeah,
he's just
not
kind
really,
of like
the
errand boy kind of.
Yeah,
he's,
I guess
the good,
I mean,
fighter
like
that they throw out there.
Exactly. But I guess I always assumed that at some point, I don't think he's ever like king or whatever, but Link is like potentially a trusted lieutenant or a general. He's a fixer of sorts. And to see a Link that is not, to see Link not starting over, and to see maybe him have a, you know, more complex and nuanced relationship with Zelda. We saw a little bit of that in Breath of the Wild, but it's mostly like that, you know, we've almost always gotten Silent Link as well. So to have a Link that is like an active participant in the world, maybe making decisions and sending you guys on quests and missions that don't entirely work out, I think could be fun to see the other side of, especially a Zelda game, although I can't imagine a Zelda game making Link not look like the absolute best. That would be what I would want out of this thing, of like, okay, well, it turns out that Link actually, you know, he kind of uses the Gerudo people in most of his dealings with them. He's always being given something, and like, what is he doing in return for them in some cases?
Maybe it's set at a point in time. I mean, could range over a large, you know, decades at a time, kind of a series of mini campaigns, with the early game taking place towards the tail end of one of the kind of Link Ganon wars, where eventually, you know, Link's side ends up prevailing, and then you're kind of keeping the peace in the kingdom for a while. And then, you know, after some decades pass, you start to see, you know, Link, the ruler, become complacent. Zelda has since passed on, and Link kind of becomes the next Ganon. And you start to realize this is all like a cycle of, you know, saving the kingdom and then eventually throwing it into ruin again. And so you have to then at that point defeat the link that you've been serving at for all this time, who is, you know, still claiming to be the rightful ruler of the land and using these kind of nefarious methods to reclaim control after it's usurped by one of the other powers and such. So, you know, kind of give you a different perspective on some of these Zelda stories.
Yeah, especially, wow, okay. So I think that is a great hook. And imagine the crew of these different races that have existed all throughout Hyrule history coming together and going on quests and missions. And maybe all of their missions are to, like, help protect slash ensure the life of the different links throughout time. So you actually have kind of one Zelda game filling in all those weird timeline gaps between all the Zeldas. And, you know, it turns out they fought with your, you know, uncle or whoever at the beginning of Link to the Past, and they weren't able to save him. And, like, so they're almost a Doctor Whovian type of story where, well, it turns out that they were at every single encounter that kind of it's behind kicked the off scenes. The story. Yeah, right. For each Zelda.
That's cool. Let's end that one there. And, you know, I was thinking for names, this might be a good time to reuse the great name, which I've always appreciated, of Hyrule Historia.
Oh, very good. Yeah, I think that that's cool, especially if we do a time thing.
I mean, obviously, the Zelda series is very, very comfortable with timelines and games about time. So, yeah, I think it fits. That was from Nathan Norman, who wrote us in on our website. He went to playwrightcast.com/pitch and pitched the game there. You can also write in your own ideas at playwrightcast@gmail.com and at playwrightcast on Twitter.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song, Hello World, off the album Blue Noise. And special thank you to our parent network, Kane and Rinse, where you can listen to great shows like the Kane and Rinse podcast. If you just can't get enough of me, I'm going to be on a Sound of Play in a, I don't know, some future period from maybe when you're hearing this, or maybe it'll be before you're here. I have no idea what's happening. And of course, the Sausage Factory, where you can listen to interviews with game developers and H, I've got some good tracks here for Sound of Play that I'm going to be on, so I hope you listen.
Awesome. Will do. All right. Well, I will take us out today with a miniature video game idea, and we've explored the history of The Legend of Zelda, but I think that we are all deeply missing out on the complex and well-chronicled at this point history of the Donkey Kong game. So how about a Donkey Kong RTS war game?
Perfect. Fire the bananas.
That's right. We'll see you next week.
Bye.